Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Jeff Lenahan. He'll be sitting in for Matt Watson today. Jeff, what's up?
Not much, Matt. How are you?
You know what? I'm excellent and improving as usual. And before I let our listeners know what we're going to talk about today in your business, I do need to mention that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software development team quickly and affordably. Now, with us today, we have one of the esteemed winners of the Startup Hustle Top Startups in St. Louis, our neighbor to the east in Kansas City. I'm excited to talk about this stuff today because it's right within my purview of sales, marketing, and stuff like that. So with us today, Jeff Lenahan, the co-founder, president, and COO of Advocado.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, and thanks for making me say Advocado.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
wait till you see our jackets that we have.
I have a feeling they're green.
Very bright green with little avocado.
If they weren't, I would really question your ability as a marketer. But so those of you listening, you know I like it when you are interactive. So go to myadvocado.com so you can see all about what these guys do. If you want to check them out on the gram, or on send them a tweet, follow them at myadvocado as well. So, all right. So here we are. You've got an interesting name. We know you have green jackets with I wanted to say avocados on them. I guess they are.
They are actually avocados, not avocados on them. So they're little mini company logos on there.
I agree. And now I'm going to let you go ahead and lay out the backstory as well as like give us a little info about the problem that you guys are solving.
Absolutely. So Matt, my business partner and I and co-founder and I have been in the sales and marketing space for he longer than I. He's been in it for 25 plus years. I've been in it for probably the last 10 or 12 years. And at one point in our business partnership, we actually owned a digital agency together and did a lot of advertising, particularly in the healthcare space. And so we had a lot of clients who would do TV advertising. And we could see firsthand, because we were managing their search campaigns and sometimes their social campaigns, we could see firsthand what would happen positively when our clients would run TV. The challenge that we had was we could never really take advantage of it with any degree of particularity. So we played with it. We developed some algorithms around how do we try and play off of whatever knowledge we could get about when and where TV ads might run for our clients. But about 3 years ago, back in 2017, my business partner and I were day-to-day active in our previous SaaS startup that we founded back in 2012. And we were kind of getting the itch to grow and build again. We had hired an outside CEO in that business, and it was growing. So we were at the right point in time to move on and to our next project. And we just so happened to get introduced to a family here in St. Louis. And they own, among other things, they've been in the broadcast business for a long time. And they own some interesting technology. It's a patented watermarking technology that essentially, when we started learning more about it, we realized it would give us real time, within a second or two, knowledge of when and where a TV ad was running and what creative was on that screen. And our minds started turning back to our digital marketing days. And we said, wait a minute, that could be really powerful, because if we knew exactly when a TV ad was running and where and what creative, all of a sudden we could turn around and use that knowledge to impact and take advantage of that lift that we know happens on the digital side and is created by those TV ads. And so that's where we started, right, was using a client's TV ad, their own TV ad, to power and optimize what they were doing in their Google Ads campaigns. And that was where we started, because we knew that space the best, and it was the biggest space that people play in, obviously Google being the behemoth. And so, you know, we built an MVP back in 2017 and said, hey, let's give this a whirl. We found somebody who decided that they'd be willing to test it out for us. And it was a 3-week TV pilot, and we turned it on, and we originally thought, you know what, if we could impact the click-through rates and improve the click-through rates that this client was experiencing by about 30%, which was in and of itself pretty monumental. We said, hey, you know, if we could do that for about a 10% increase in cost per click, we could sell that. Needless to say, and by the way, we had an A/B test to compare it to, because this client had run the same TV in the same market just a few weeks previously without our product. And so when we turned it on, after the first week, we'd increased it by 34%. By the end of the third week, it had continued to increase all the way up to 98%. So we doubled their click-through rates in 3 weeks. And there was all kinds of things that came out of that and all kinds of learnings. But the bottom line was, it far exceeded our expectations. And by the way, we did that with about a 9% increase in their cost per click. So we said, wow, okay, we have something. Let's do this. So we spent the better part of 2018 building it out. And we ended up launching out of beta in the fall of 2018.
Okay. So, and, you know, we'll get into some of that, covering the rest of that timeline, but let me back up, because I want to understand this. This is a very unique approach, and congrats for finding one.
Thank you.
Because a lot of people are chasing different solutions, because this was a problem. I sometimes the problems that are the most advantageous to solve are the ones you didn't even realize were an issue. So, all right. So an ad plays on TV, which, you know, can create some surge in traffic. Is that correct?
Yeah. So you know, Google's been talking about that for 10 years, right? That when you look at a TV ad running, and then you look at what happens to search trends in Google's case, in the window after that, there's a direct correlation and increase that happens.
Okay. So they're searching, let's just say I'm looking for hammocks, right? So an advertiser that makes hammocks is like, hey, I've got the greatest hammock. This is going to make your summer. But the search traffic sometimes just searches hammocks, not necessarily like going to that company's site. So there's like latency or loss in that. And like you're stirring up activity in the hammock space, but not necessarily getting it accurate for your own business. Is that the problem? Was that
well,
the issue?
Yeah. Yes and no. So here's the real issue, right? 94% of people admit that they watch TV with a secondary device in hand, right? So they've got a smartphone, they've got a tablet sitting there on the couch with them when they're watching TV. And 78% of those people admit that if they see something interesting on TV, whether it's in an ad or in a program,
Google it, or they
pick up that secondary device and they go to Google and they search for it, or they go to Facebook and they scroll through to learn more, right? And all we're doing is that behavior is human nature. That's happening. We're just allowing our clients to take advantage of it by optimizing and putting the gas pedal to the floor during that window when we know all those people and all that intent is being created.
Interesting. So, you know, obviously there's interesting cases, like, I don't know if it we'll use the Super Bowl, because why not use the biggest surge of anything? Like, there was, I can't even remember who it was. It was like Volvo or someone had a commercial and they ran it, and I tried to hit their website because I was like, oh, that looks cool. And I did the same thing. Like you mentioned, the site didn't even work because it was completely overrun. But I was unaware that there was, and that's kind of, that lost opportunity that's really difficult to gauge. So do you have to be a big advertiser to really like, is this about me capitalizing on someone else's Super Bowl ad rather than having to pay for it? And like, all of a sudden I'm like, hey, I'm a little better, faster and smarter. So I know that, okay, Volvo's site might be down, but they were looking for blah, blah, blah. I don't know if Volvo's the right example. Well, you know what? They advertise at avocados.
Yep.
At the Super Bowl. So using avocado, I could as an avocado seller or marketer, I would be able to potentially increase my visibility at that point.
Yeah, so I couldn't have written the segue any better, Matt. Volvo is a perfect example, right? So think about it. So we started with a Volvo. Let's use Volvo's example. Volvo would show a TV ad. They knew that they had a Google Ads campaign going on for the S60 or whatever model, right? And so when they knew that a lot of people were going to be searching for sports sedan or for Volvo or for whatever, and in any related keyword, right, they would amplify the hell out of those keywords in Google search to take advantage of all that intent. But we've taken the platform well beyond that. And one of the places, and this goes exactly to your question, one of the places that we've taken it is we now, through introducing an alternative technology, we don't use our patented watermark, we use a technology called automatic content recognition, but through ACR, what we can do is actually allow clients to conquest against their competitors' ads. So let's take Volvo, right? Let's say that their biggest competitor is the Audi A6, just by way of example, for this particular S60 model. Well, when they see that an Audi A6 ad is on, they can boost the hell out of their search ads campaign and take advantage of all the intent that Audi's creating with that money they've spent on their ad, and they can conquest it away. Or if a local Volvo dealership, right? Let's say Volvo has their own ad out there, and a local dealership doesn't want to run their own TV ad, but they want to take advantage of that Volvo Super Bowl ad, right? They can use our automatic content recognition solution to draft off of that intent that's created by Volvo at the corporate level, and they can use it to drive people either to their website or to a landing page or wherever they want.
Cool. What about non-advertising content on TV? And, here's the thing, dude, there's 10 million channels and 10 million time zones doing 10 million things. And let's use The Prophet with Marcus Lemonis as an example. And we'll use the Startup Hustle podcast as an advertiser. Like, and I've wondered, I was like, if I wanted to promote the podcast, would advertising during The Prophet be the time to do it? I mean, that would be why not? Right. That would be our kind, or like during Shark Tank or something.
Absolutely.
Like that, our kind of viewer or listener. Do you guys also offer solutions that help time ads around non-paid content?
We do. I shouldn't say we do currently. Right. So one thing that you'll always get with us and our team is total transparency. So I'm not going to tell you we have something that we don't, but I certainly can tell you that that is part of our future. To be able to activate off a variety of things. So we're actually getting ready to introduce. So we look at our platform really as two-sided, right? There's the trigger side. So there's something in the offline world. It could be a TV ad. In the future, it could be a number of different things. It could be a weather trigger, right? It could be a breaking news trigger. It could be in programming content, right? Product placement inside of a TV ad or a TV program. And that would be the trigger side. And then there's what we do with it, which is the action we take on the digital side. So while we don't currently today have that in our active platform, it's definitely part of what we're looking to do in the future. Because you're right, there's tons and tons of opportunity there.
Yeah, well, then that's the thing. It's like if you haven't done CPC ads on Google before, like you can be pretty damn precise, meaning like you can schedule them. You can say, show them. I could theoretically go in and schedule my ads to only show during that show, Now, that would require quite a bit of, now, if I wanted to scale that up across like a bunch of, I don't know how many. Okay, I used to buy a lot of ads before I worked for myself and then spent my own money, which it's painful.
Oh, yeah.
To not get right when it's your own money. It's way easier to like work for Globocorp and, you know, kind of figure out the experiments there. But you know, that optimization is real. And if you have to scale it up, now I think a lot of people, you know, advertising is often about precision. It's also about timing. Do you find, is it a challenge, like, so in an on-demand world, like with DVRs and, you know, Apple TV and all this other stuff, does that make your job a lot more challenging?
Well, I mean, look, we all know that, you know, there's the classic adage out there that, oh, broadcast TV is going away, right? And what, you know, people we get that frequently, less frequently now, but in the beginning we got that a lot. Like, why would you build a platform that has to do with something like broadcast television, which is just getting smaller and smaller and going away, and everything's moving to connected TV or over the top video, or it doesn't scare us because there are a lot of solutions out there where that we've got in our roadmap that will address some of the problems that those folks have too. The reason we started with something kind of old school like broadcast television is because it's old school, connecting that to what we're doing on the digital side of things is the most difficult gap to bridge, right? I mean, it's really easy to connect your over-the-top ads that are digitally delivered, that are programmatic in nature. It's really easy, not easy, but it's much easier to connect the dots there and understand what's happening and attribute what specific digital engagement happens as a result of those ads. But at that becomes much more difficult when you cross over into that old school offline world where broadcast television and billboards and things like that live.
By the way, I'm so old that the first time I had cable TV, I had the AB button on top of the TV. And the big debate was always like, do I want to get up out of my chair to go hit the B button?
I remember the AB button.
That might have been where ESPN was, but it wasn't where CBS was. So
yeah, I also remember my VCR with a remote control that had a cord attached to it.
Dude, yeah, not to age ourselves.
I know, right?
I was trying to convince my wife at breakfast today that because I turned 45 in a month, and I was trying to convince her that 45 is the new 30 for men, and she wasn't buying it. So, and some of that might be because I definitely do not look like I'm 30 anymore. Now, for those of you listening, we are basically discussing digital strategy, and digital strategy is an overarching term. It's also the name of one of the most popular podcast episodes on Startup Hustle in 2020, which is just called Digital Strategy, which was part of a four-part series that I did with Full Scale CMO, just kind of talking about a lot of the stuff you're talking about. Because, dude, digital world is deep, wide, broad, complex. There's a lot to it. You could spend an unlimited amount of money in an unlimited amount of space. And if you get really good at it, then you can do really well with it. And if you are not really good at it, then you will probably be better to just actually go to your bathroom and put money in the toilet and flush it down, because it could be cheaper on many levels. So
totally. Well, you know, look, the biggest misconception.
Is that something you help users with? Is actually, because it's one thing to have tools. It's another thing to know how to use them.
Right. So, I mean, as a matter of practice, we are not a strategy. We're not an agency, right? So we're not buying media. We're not helping a client with strategy. We're not doing creative. That being said, because we produce a lot of really powerful data, right? All of our data is real time. It is extremely granular. I mean, we go well beyond data that you can get out of a tool like a Google Analytics, for example, right? Which is hourly data. We have second by second data, visitor level data. And so what the way we help in that situation is not so much by helping them understand the strategy. We let their agencies do that. In fact, and one of the ways we designed our platform was specifically so that we would not have to come in and disintermediate anybody in the value chain in order for a client to adopt us. Because
disintermediate.
You like that? Well, I got to tell you.
If you can define that without looking it up, please go to the @StartupHustlePodcast Instagram and comment on this episode's display.
Hey, so, I gotta sound smart somehow. So I'm just throwing out some.
I know, but
words,
don't leave the rest of us behind. I mean, come on, man. Like, this is like the No Child Left Behind thing. I mean, come on. Give me a little room to work with here, Jeff.
We learned that lesson the hard way, my friend. In our last startup, right? The biggest thing that we underestimated was the cost of change. For our potential clients. And so we did not make that mistake this time around. And so we wanted to make sure that we didn't have to kick anybody out in order for somebody or a client to bring us in. So, but back to your original question, right? Where we really help them is not so much in creating that strategy. Again, we let the agency or their consultants, whoever's creating their strategy, continue to do that. But we just provide them with an incredibly rich set of data that's going to better inform them in making those decisions around what their strategy should or should not be.
Okay, so that's good to know. And by the way, your website is proving my theory correct that 1 + 1 = 4. So maybe you could explain that, because like I said, I'm at myadvocado.com, and check them out on the social medias, myadvocado. I'm willing to bet that you have advocado capitalized on that. That's an interesting play. So I probably won't be able to say avocado well for a while, but
that word does not exist in my vocabulary anymore.
Yeah, I don't blame you. If I were you, it wouldn't either. But tell me why 1 + 1 = 4.
It's really a play on that idea that you actually mentioned this earlier, right? We solve a problem that a lot of people have realized existed for a long time, but they've come to accept the fact that it's one that's never going to be solved, because a lot of people have tried for a lot of years to solve it using a lot of different methods. And so they've come to accept the fact that, you know what, I'm not going to solve this problem. And so even though it doesn't make sense to me, I guess it is, right? And it's going to be. And so we come in and we solve that, and we're big Peter Thiel fans, my co-founder and I, if you've ever read his book, 0 to 1. It's about solving that problem that we don't understand and we think is impossible to solve.
Okay. So once again with us today, Jeff Lenihan, the CEO or the COO, president and co-founder of Advocado, found at myadvocado.com. Also the proud owner of a future trophy as being inducted into the very first top St. Louis startups class by Startup Hustle. So, and that's probably your big win, right?
I mean, honestly,
2020 could end today and you're like, hey, I got that.
I mean, my life is complete.
I get it. I understand. And you know, that's, I mean, the sense of satisfaction and completing so many people's professional goals all with one trophy. So
I know, right?
Like I said, we're taking the show on the road a little more, even though we have listeners in 190 different countries. And thank you so much for everyone out there that continues to tune in. But part of why we're doing this is we think that there are amazing startup communities in everywhere USA. I mean, they're not, you know, and even though we're in Kansas City, which is like the 27th biggest media market in the country, We found so many interesting people to talk to, have such a robust startup community. So in St. Louis, like what's the startup culture like there?
So it's tremendous, right? There's several areas where the St. Louis startup culture has really upped its game. You think about areas like agriculture. You think about areas like biotech. Those are probably the two biggest ones. But just in general, the startup ecosystem has really, really accelerated the last few years. There's a lot of activity, both kind of in the early stage funding side of things, but also in support for those startups. And you're starting to see more and more folks that touch in our space, right, in the advertising and marketing space, because, you know, St. Louis is interesting. We were probably next to New York, the strongest 15 years ago. We were the strongest, most vibrant agency community in the country next to New York City, and certainly on a per capita basis. But then all of a sudden, Anheuser-Busch sold to InBev, and it probably overnight put 25 agencies out of business. And look, not a good thing, right? That kind of customer concentration existed, certainly for the agencies and their folks. But what it has done has created a community of people who didn't want to relocate, right? And have a tremendous amount of experience, knowledge, and expertise. And those are folks that are starting to do things like we're doing in the community, where they're creating new platforms and they're creating new companies that touch the advertising and marketing space in different ways other than being a traditional agency.
So according to, you have raised over $3 million in investment capital. Now, one of the things is we talked about, we'll call, you know, you're in this, I'm technically in Kansas right now. That's where I was born. That's where I was raised, but might as well be in Missouri. I live right next to the state line. Literally right next to the state line. When I could drive to the full scale office, when I was headed north on State Line Road, I would be in Missouri. And when I would drive home, I would be in Kansas. So interesting.
My grandparents lived right off of State Line Road, so I know it well.
Well, then you know where I'm at. So yep, sure. Now with that, so many of our guests in the past have expressed frustration, or I don't know, they just weren't really super thrilled about the whole process of raising money for a startup outside of New York, Boston, San Francisco, or maybe Miami or Atlanta. So, you know, as far as raising that money, like how did that experience go? That's for most a sizable amount. Tell us a little bit about how that process went, and maybe even give a few tips about, I don't know, what could you have done better or what could you have done less of? I don't know.
Yeah. So, by the way, as I mentioned earlier, this is our second pure software as a service startup, and I can tell you we did a lot of things differently this time around that made the process much more tolerable and much easier for us. That's not to say by any stretch of the imagination that it was easy, but we did a couple of things, right? One is we started looking for capital, not just in St. Louis. So we've raised capital from, ironically, not any capital from the Valley, but from Denver, from New York, from Chicago. So a variety, and St. Louis as well. I mean, we didn't exclude St. Louis from that, but part of it was we went about the process very differently than we did last time. You know, we worked really hard with our minimum viable product to establish product market fit, understand and really define what our go-to-market strategy was. And so even relatively early on in our fundraising efforts, even our very first fundraising efforts, we had a lot of that stuff. Now, a lot of it's changed over time and evolved, but we had a lot of that stuff laid out and put together. I got to, you know, quite honestly, we didn't have any of that shit put together the first time around. And so what it did was it allowed us to raise money from people who are more than just a checkbook too, which is huge for us. And frankly, that's been the biggest advantage we've had this time around, is that when we bring an investor in, we bring in an investor who brings not only capital, but also industry expertise, or a Rolodex that they can open up to us, or any other variety of value that you can bring to the table outside of just money.
Now, you know, with that, and you can get smart money without having it always be individual. So first off, look, just because you're not in San Francisco, Boston, New York, doesn't mean you can't raise capital. There's so much going for you. Yep. Being in markets like Kansas City and St. Louis, and the first part starts with this is not nearly as expensive to operate here. You know, it's not as difficult to compete for talent, your office space. You don't have to pay $4,000 for a closet. And, you know, there's and I hear too many people discount their ability to get a round raised. I'm in Kansas City, or I'm in St. Louis. Well, first off, look anywhere, because money can be, they don't care. I mean, totally. The investors are looking for opportunity. In some cases, they may care where you're at, but really in the end, if you have a great business model and you have a great business and you're someone that that people will believe will be successful, then you got a shot. And you know, you're never really going to go out there. It's like too many people. I talk to a lot of people that say, I couldn't raise any capital. I'm like, well, who'd you try? They're like, well, I tried, and they list like five places and they're all local. I'm like, dude, yeah. Okay. You're like 95 applications short of probably even getting a callback.
Yeah. That death by a thousand cups of coffee is, no matter how sophisticated you are, and no matter how many times you've done it, you know, with I guess a few exceptions, if Mark Zuckerberg wanted to go out and raise capital, he probably wouldn't have to have a thousand cups of coffee. But you know, for the most part, it's a grind, man. And I don't care how good your business model is, how sophisticated you are, how great of a team you have, and I think we have all of that stuff. It's still a freaking grind.
You know, you got to keep in mind that people that write checks, especially institutional type investors, and however you want to classify that, they see a lot of deals, man. Like, they're going to see, I mean, everyone we've had on the show that is in that segment of life. Hey, look, I look at 100 deals to maybe get into one. And we've proven that statistically with the VCs, whoever that are out there. And I mean, you gotta come proper, and you gotta be ready, and you gotta, like, I don't know. I know the people that I know that are the best at raising money. Well, when I talk to them, and they'll be like, "Hey, man, you let me bounce this off of you, because I'm curious what you have to say about it." And they almost always will say something like, "I think I'm gonna have to contact at least 200 places to maybe get someone to write a check." Like, they're actually almost like click through rate or cost of acquisition. Like, totally. They're like, I think, and in some cases it might be lower, in some cases it might be higher. And same thing, like, you know, a friend of mine was telling me, he goes, yeah, I applied for loans at 160 banks to get funded here by one, you know, whatever. I was like, wow. But it's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Well, so you got
it really in the end, how bad do you want it?
Totally. And you know, and you got to go into it, right, with doing a lot of the right things before you start, right? And because to your point, these investors are seeing hundreds of deals every day, practically. Yeah. Yeah. And anything you can do to get to clean your deal up, and anything, I mean, they're looking for a reason to say no, right? Because they're looking for a reason to say no, on move on to the next deal. And so anything you as a founder can do to make sure that there are none of the, you know, there's none of that hair on your startup, the better, frankly.
Yeah. And if, you know, I mean, whether it's, I don't, regardless, I see so much sloppy stuff when it comes to a pitch or a plan or whatever, like,
or just a really messy cap.
It's really funny, because I met someone a couple months ago that was a listener to the show, and I was like, well, email me. And the guy was like, yeah, but you won't email me back. I was like, why? He's like, because I still have a Yahoo email at my .com. I've spent so much time talking about that. I always use that as an example. I'm like, yeah. don't pitch me on your .com and then tell me to get back to you at your Gmail address. Like, yeah. I mean, and it's little goofy things, man. And like you said, investors looking for a reason to say no. The same rules apply for the grant that you're applying for the accelerator that you want to get in, for all of those things, man. It just starts to stick out. And you know, just be short and sweet. You get right to the point and don't be afraid to sell people on your big vision. I think it's, you know, those are some fundamentals. You know, if you had to give one tidbit of advice for fundraising, what would it be?
Oh man. You know, it depends on the stage you're at, right? I think there's different strategies that you have to have going in to each stage of
universal.
Your fundraising.
Don't overthink it. You get one, thing and you have to help the most amount of founders possible.
I'd probably say keep your cap table as simple as possible. Right. I mean, that for me is one of the most significant things is a clean cap table and keep a really good data room and just keep your shit up to date and ready to go just in general across the board.
Let's talk about this for a second, though, because like when you say keep a clean cap table, like, you know, expand on that. And I'll weigh a few things in. I'll let you go first there.
Yeah. So
I don't think everybody listening is going to get what that really means.
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest thing I mean by that is, and obviously you don't always have a choice, but to the extent possible, avoid raising money at $5,000, $10,000, or $15,000, or $20,000 at a time, right? If you're raising $1 million round, don't raise money at $10,000, $15,000, or $20,000 a pop, because then you're going to end up with 100 different investors on your cap table, and you've only got $1 million of capital raised, right? So, I mean, to the extent possible, find folks that can put in 100 or 200 or 300 in that kind of a scenario, and then again, you know, make sure to the extent possible that they're smart money, because those two things are going to get you a simple cap table, so not hundreds of investors. And also, you know, you want to try and this is probably another thing that I would have put kind of at that high level is, don't be overly greedy with your valuation. Right. And that'll help you.
Yeah. I think that's important too. And you know, I talk to so many people that let's expand that to also be like your co-founders and your employees. Because, you know, so many times I'm watching people in that early stage and it's like an Oprah show. You get some equity. Let's create a pool of equity. And the next thing you know, you've got 16 co-founders. And here's the thing is first off, people get way too generous in their beginning. They're like, hey, I think my cousin Randy would be great at being an advisor. We should give him 10% of the business.
Yeah.
And you're like, and you know, the thing is some of these people are going to be helpful. Some of them are not. But if you have like 15 co-founders on your cap table and only four of them are with you 2 years later, that'd be a big red flag for me. I'd be like, where are these other people? Why aren't they here? What's the story with that? And it's kind of like that, that shiny thing that can attack, you know, you want to keep your focus. You want to keep the investor's focus on the deal, on the opportunity, on the problem, on the solution, on the potential exit or total addressable market, something other than why is this look like a rat's nest? So yeah, I think that my advice is just like be exact, be brief, be like get to the fucking point. Like
absolutely,
no one wants on the first contact. No one wants to see your 67-page business plan. I'm sorry, no one is going to look at it. If you can't get it all on the front of one piece of paper, then you have overcomplicated it. And remember that you're just trying to get someone's attention in that beginning. Like if you get to the point where people want to diligence you or look whatever, then they're going to look at the 67-page part of it and probably still not even that.
No.
Probably still not even that. So
yeah, okay. I mean, I along those lines, there's a great book actually called Get Backed. I don't know if you've ever read that book or are familiar with it.
No.
By two guys named Evan, and I can never remember what their last names are, but it's called Get Backed. And man, it is, in my opinion, the Bible for how to put together a pitch deck exactly like you're talking about, right? Get the necessary information out there, but leave all the other shit out because nobody's interested in it.
Yeah, and we've recently did a go through the feed. There's a lot of investor stuff in there, but we did an article recently or an episode recently about creating a pitch deck, and we also have an article in the Full Scale blog about that. Because, I mean, a lot, like I said, like your point is to talk about investment in the business and keep it short, sweet. You're usually dealing with Type A people, and they don't want to hear all those details anyway. Yep. And another thing too is, man, if I had to hear 20 pitches a day, I'd go numb pretty quickly on a lot of them. And it's not uncommon for people. Like I've seen it, like 3 minute, this isn't for us. All right, cool. Thank you for saving me time. Like that wasn't rude. That was actually, you freed me up for my own future. Okay.
Totally.
So what kind of opportunity is the COVID crisis presenting for either you or your users or advertisers in general?
Yeah. So interestingly, right, before COVID, things were pretty fat and happy. And your average marketing person / media buyer in an organization at a brand or at an agency working on behalf of a brand, right? They didn't have their boss breathing down their neck going, you know what, sales are slowing or declining. And so what the hell am I getting for all this money that you're spending, right? Things were good. Sales were increasing year over year, et cetera, et cetera. So they were less inclined in many instances to try something new, even though it could make what they were doing better. They were less inclined to give it a try. Now all of a sudden the tone has changed, right? And now the CMO or whoever's above those individuals is going, hey, not only is your budget getting cut, but I better continue to see an X percent increase in sales with that smaller budget, or we're going to have a problem, right? So now all of a sudden they being the brands or the agencies are desperate to find a way to get an edge. And Advocado is poised to step in and be one of the tools that can help them gain that edge.
Yeah. And that's, you know, if Watson was here right now, he would be talking about how in 2008, during that financial crisis, his first business, Vend Solutions, literally lit a fuse.
Yep.
And we were in a very similar scenario. The economy was popping, unemployment was at this low, things were really cruising along. And that's why you're seeing so many companies right now making cuts and doing it quickly, because, you know, when things are going well, there isn't usually like, hey, we have to be the most productive on our ad spend. I mean, you theoretically should be like that all the time, but
absolutely,
it's not the way it works.
Yeah. And, I mean, you're not as performance mindset or not as performance oriented, right?
So you got to figure out where to be smarter with the money, where to get a better return, what works, what doesn't. And that was the case with his first company, Vend Solutions. And, you know, he sold that a few years later for $150 million. So I'm going to say he did all right there.
Not a bad deal.
And keep in mind for people that buy digital marketing, you know, whether it's Google or wherever, Instagram, call it. Yeah. Those are just auctions. Those are auctions. You're bidding against other people. So at one point, and we had we did an episode about Facebook ads, and we had a guy on here who's, you know, on behalf of his clients spends $1 million a week. And I asked him, I said, I have a suspicion that CPC is way down. And he said, yeah, it's about 35% less than it was. Now that's rising back up a little bit, but yep. You know, there's some of the earliest advice I got in business was, hey, when the wind is blowing, put your sails up. And when it's not, take them down. And, it's time to fix the sails. And you know, like certain things like plowing millions of dollars into your travel ad campaign on March 27th. I guarantee you got shit results. So I don't know. It's about being smarter and using tools similar to my Advocado. Yeah. So
Well, and another place that it's really presented opportunity for us, and this is really applicable to all companies, right? Not just ones in our space. And that is that, you know, the unfortunate part of the whole crisis is one of them is the massive unemployment, but that also is a huge opportunity, right? And if you're in a situation where you can take advantage of that opportunity, which we were fortunate enough to be able to do, you can find some really, really incredible talent out there that wouldn't otherwise be on the market.
Yeah. And that's a great point. And, you know, the thing is, go America, go capitalism, because I often say capitalism is the cure, you know, and this is the thing, and this isn't going to be received well by everybody listening, but times like this are highly Darwinistic. And while sometimes, if you play poker a lot, you're going to get dealt bad cards. It happens. And you'll hear professional poker players will be like, that's poker. And that happens sometimes, but there's also a lot of, you know, I mean, if your business only had 3 days worth of cash anyway, was that a super sustainable business? And, you know, so as you mentioned, so there is opportunity sometimes in failure. I don't spend any time wishing for failure for anyone, but at the same time, like, you know, recently we did an episode with Thad from Flyover Capital, and he says, "Hey, look, the only thing that matters for businesses during times like right now is survive in advance." So, you know, sometimes you pick up some pieces, sometimes you got to let a few go, and I mean, that's very black and white, but that's kind of the way it goes.
Well, no, and I was just going to say that, you know. Look, yeah, we have a lot of awesome opportunity that's come out of this, and we're kind of on the backside of that. So we're starting to take advantage of that opportunity. But let me tell you, I mean, the first month and a half or so of this whole COVID crisis, it was definitely not all sunshine and rainbows for us, right? I mean,
no.
we had all the same shit storm that we had, that everybody else had, and we had to deal with all the other challenges, and we busted our ass to get through it and find solutions to those challenges so we could take advantage of the opportunity on the backside.
Yeah. And that's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's the way it goes. So once again, with us today, Jeff Lenihan, the co-founder, president, and COO. I keep wanting to say CEO. So COO.
You can just keep saying CEO, and I'll rub it.
You got my O's mixed up. Advocado.
I'm doing my best to fuck you up.
If you say if you could go to my avocado and tell me about, you could make about 10,000 tongue twisters with avocado, and I don't even know if I can get them out. So
there you go.
Now, if you want to learn more about what Jeff and his company do, maybe improve your own advertising. You know, here's the thing: as I always say, when it comes to marketing, there's only three words that matter, and that's test, test, test. So you're never going to know what this is. A unique solution. I wasn't even aware. And look, I've been in the marketing space for a while, and a lot of people, if I have a superpower, it's generating hype, which is marketing and promotion. And the thing is like, I wasn't even aware that a solution like this was out there. And it makes me want to try it, because that test, test, test mentality, who knows? We could crush it. My whole marketing plan is I'm looking for a crack, and when I find it, I try to shove an elephant through it.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the whole thing. But the thing is if you're not test, test, test and trying a lot of different things, don't be afraid to try 10 things to see which one, if one even works for you. So, you know, that's part of it. Go to my Advocado, and that's M-Y-A-D Vocado. Just click the link in the show notes, people.
Or it's avocado with a D put in there.
I already forgot the word of the day.
It is disintermediated.
Disintermediated.
There you go.
I would have stopped the episode and asked Matt Watson to spell that if he had joined us today.
I could not spell that, rest assured.
I get it. That's okay. He's O for life on the instant spelling bee, because I never ask him to stop and spell anything that's actually spellable by humans.
Yeah.
So once again, man, thanks for taking the time, and congrats on making our top St. Louis startups list.
Thank you.
You know, it's, I think that regardless of whether it's startup hustle or anything, it's always good to hear that others recognize that you're doing cool stuff. I think this is really cool. I want to check out more about it. And so with that, I'm going to head over to My Advocado. See you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.